He'd been out for nearly 12 hours. Meanwhile, I'd been busy moving all the boxes from the dining room to the newly finished garage, stacked them against walls, organized them into piles, for Dad, for Daniel, for me. Everything else must go, and everything else was heaped in the middle of the floor in garbage bags, cookbooks and glass figurines, magazines from a year ago, and floral curtains that had seen better days, old credit card notices and pens that had run out of ink. "Coffee's downstairs," I said, "when you're ready." I poured myself a mug and stood in front of the kitchen window with a view over the back porch, straight to the woods. Everett brushed my arm and I jumped.
"Sorry, didn't mean to sneak up on you," he said,
reaching around me for the coffee pot. I brought the cup to my lips, but the liquid seemed bitter and left a foul aftertaste. I dumped it in the sink as Everett filled his cup. "I'll make a new pot," I said. The steam rose from his cup as he took a sip.
"It's perfect. Nice view,"
he said, standing beside me. We were down in the valley, so we didn't have much of a view other than trees. But I guessed it was better than the view in the city, buildings and sky, or, from my place, the parking lot. There was also the hill that rose up behind us here, with a great view into the valley on this side, and the forest stretching to the river on the other side. I should take him there, show him something worth seeing. "This piece of land," I'd tell him, "it's been in my family for 3 generations. It wasn't much, but Dad did have a point. Small though it was ours. The Carter property jutted against ours at a stream that had dried out long ago and was now a narrow ditch that got shallower every year from leaves decaying, land eroding. The next generation would have to put up a fence or a sign if they cared to know where the line fell. Everett didn't spend long at the window, slumping into a chair at the kitchen table and rubbing his temple as he sipped the coffee.
"God, what do they put in the drinks down here? Tell me that was moonshine so I can maintain a little self-respect."
I pulled open a cabinet, surveying the cups. "Ha," I said, "this is the South. More bang for your buck. Not everything gets watered down and jacked up in price. I could bring my parents' wedding china to Daniel's tonight and be nearly done with the kitchen. I could leave the money for him before he could notice and say no. And since Everett was here, that was probably all I'd be getting done anyway. Daniel and Laura want us to come for dinner tonight," I said.
"That sounds great,"
he said.
"Would be even better if they had internet."
"I'm sure they do, but Laura's probably going to ask about 300 wedding questions, just so you're prepared." He tilted his head back and grinned from across the room.
300, huh?
The price of internet access.
A fair trade, I suppose.
He walked to the dining room where his laptop and briefcase sat on the table. It was a tiny alcove, visible from the kitchen, where I had been organizing and storing most of the boxes. He glanced around the empty room.
"You got a lot done. How long have you been up?"
"A while," I called, opening the rest of the cabinet so the room seemed even smaller, the walls closing in on us. "Look around. There's still so much to do."
"Yeah, well, I probably could have done that for you in half the time if you'd waited."
"Everett, please," I snapped. He tapped his pen against the dining room table.
"You're stressed."
I grabbed a stack of plates, setting them down on the table across from him. "Of course I'm stressed. Imagine the police treating your father like this."
"Okay, calm down,"
he said, and I suddenly hated how practical he sounded, how condescending. He shifted in his seat, wood scraping against wood.
"About your dad, Nicolette."
"Yes." I stood on the other side of the wooden table, folded my arms across my chest.
"I can stop people from officially questioning him, but I can't stop him from volunteering information. You get that, right?"
My stomach twisted. "But he doesn't even know what he's saying. He's borderline senile. You get that, right?" He nodded, powered up the computer, flicked his eyes to me and back to his screen.
"Is it possible he did have something to do with it?"
"With what?" I asked. He kept his eyes on the screen, made like he was half working, but I knew him too well.
"The girl, 10 years ago.
"No, Everett. God," I said. "And her name is Corinne. She wasn't just some girl. She was my best friend." He flinched, his gaze flitting over me as if he'd just woken up in my room full of painted furniture.
"You're acting like I should know this, but you've never mentioned her. Not once. Don't get mad at me because you neglected to tell me."
Neglected. Like it was my duty. My failure. My fault. All the stories I hadn't told him. Corinne and me in the principal's office. Corinne and me in the kitchen with my mother, flour on our clothes, licking the sugar from our lips. Corinne and me in the back of Officer Brix's car senior year, his first month on the job, trying to keep a straight face when he said, "I'm not a taxi service. Next time I'll bring you down to the station, make your parents come for you." Nearly every story from my childhood included Corinne, and Everett hadn't ever heard her name. Everett didn't like it when details surprised him. He was once blindsided in the middle of a trial, information his own client had kept from him, and he lost. It was an unforeseeable outcome for him, something he wasn't expecting, and it hit him with a ferocity I wasn't expecting. Behind closed doors, he became impenetrable, closed off and borderline depressed. "You couldn't understand," he kept saying, and he was right. I couldn't. 3 days later, he started a new case, and he was back. Never mentioned it again. If Corinne were here, she would have poked at this vulnerability over and over until she could expose it, and then it would be hers, and so would he. I was more generous with people's flaws. Everyone had his or her own demons, including me. "I don't know a thing about you from high school either," I said, "because guess what? It doesn't matter."
"My family wasn't part of a potential murder investigation."
He didn't look at me when he said it, and I didn't blame him. I leaned across the table, my palms sweaty on the surface. "Oh, I get it. This would look bad for you, right? Taint your perfect family image." He brought a hand down on the table, harder than either of us expected to judge from the look on his face. He ran his hand through his hair and leaned back in his seat, taking me in.
"This isn't you," he said.
It was my own fault. I wasn't sure Everett had ever got a real grasp of who I was. We started dating when I was off for the summer, so I spent most of the summer being Everett's girlfriend. I could be whatever he needed, whenever he needed it. I was the very definition of flexibility. I could bring him lunch at the office, say hi to his dad, stay out as late as I wanted and sleep until noon, could help his sister move apartments, browse the flea markets in the afternoon, always free by the time he got home from work, always willing to do what he wanted. By the time I went back to work the next month, we had crammed triple the time into the same amount of space. I'd made myself small and unobtrusive, and I fit neatly into his pre-existing life. 1 year later, and he knew things about me like a list of evidence presented in a case. Everything removed from the scene, labeled and numbered in plastic bags. Nicolette Farrell, age 28. Father, Patrick Farrell, vascular dementia following stroke. Mother, Shanna Farrell, deceased following cancer. Hometown, Coulee Ridge, North Carolina. Education, bachelor's in psychology, master's in counseling. Brother, Daniel, insurance claims adjuster. Favorite foods and favorite shows and the things I liked and the way I liked them. My past, just a list of facts, not something that ever truly existed for him.
"I didn't come here to fight," he said.
"I know." I took a deep breath. Corinne was screwed up, and I missed it. Or I ignored it. I don't know. And the investigation was even more screwed up. But my dad didn't do anything.
"Tell me then," he said. "Tell me the story."
When I balked, he put his hands up as if attempting to calm me.
"This is my job. I'm good at it."
The story. That's exactly what it was now. A story with gaps that we attempted to fill with things that made sense. A story with different perspectives and different narrators and a single girl at the center. We were 18, had just graduated. My voice turned low, and even to me it sounded haunting. Haunted. It was this time of year, almost exactly 10 years ago. The fair was here, just like last week. We were all at the fair that night.
"Who's we?"
he asked. I threw my hands up. "All of us. Everyone."
"Even your dad?"
I flashed to this image, me on the stand and Everett asking questions, getting to the truth. No, not my dad. Daniel, Corinne and me and our other friend Bailey, we went together in Daniel's car. Our friends were going to be there. All of our friends.
And did you leave together?
Everett, are you going to let me tell the story or are you going to cross-examine me? He folded his hands on the table.
Sorry. Habit.
My limbs twitched. Too much caffeine. I paced in front of the table, trying to wear it off. No, we didn't leave together. Daniel and I got in a fight. It was kind of chaotic after that, keeping up with who stayed and who left exactly. But I left with someone else when Corinne was still there. I shrugged. That's my part of the story. Bailey couldn't find Corinne after, so she caught a ride home with my brother later. She assumed Corinne had made up with her ex, Jackson. But Jackson swore he never saw her that night. Everett took a sip of his coffee, staying silent, waiting for more. I shrugged again. Her mom called my house in the morning, looking for her, then Bailey's and Jackson's. By the end of the night, we were already searching the woods.
That's it?
That's it. You couldn't explain the rest to someone who wasn't there, who didn't know her or us. That a story is the most simplified version of events, something to file away into a soundbite, dulled and sharpened at the same time.
I know how these things go, Nicolette.
I nodded, but I didn't sit down, didn't get any closer. Other than the sorry excuse for an investigation, it got ugly. People accusing each other, saying things about Corinne, everyone's secrets out in the open, everyone's thoughts and suspicions. It was a mess. I left at the end of the summer, but nothing changed. We never found her. Everett paused. The light on his face shifted as his computer screen turned black from disuse.
So who did it?
Excuse me?
I mean, if I go sit at the bar...
He shuddered.
After I recover from last night, at least. If I go sit at the bar and buy people drinks and ask, what happened to Corinne? What are they going to say? There's always a name. Even if it never gets to an arrest or trial, there's always a common assumption. So who's the name?
Jackson, I said. Jackson Porter.
The boyfriend?
The one who mixed your drinks last night, I wanted to tell him. But the boyfriend, yeah, that was what the investigation made him. Right, I said. Everett took another sip, went back to his work.
It usually is. Are they looking at him for this other girl?
Annalise, I said, staring back out the window. I don't know. Maybe.
What do you think? Did he do it?
I don't know. There was too much to explain, too much to whittle down into a testimony under cross-examination on the stand. The thing is, Jackson and Corinne were always fighting. It was nothing new. They spent at least half their time breaking up and the rest getting back together. If Corinne hadn't disappeared, I could imagine them caught in the cycle still. Her pushing him to do something he shouldn't have done, him getting fed up and leaving, her forgiving him, and him coming back for her. He always came back for her. Didn't matter that she once sent Bailey after him when he was three drinks past drunk to see if she could get him to kiss her, or that half the time Corinne didn't show up when she said she would. Or she'd show up unexpectedly, swearing you had plans and how could you forget, and did you have a mind fuck or something? Didn't matter that she was constantly trying to get us all to prove our loyalty to her. She liked to test him, I said. She liked to test everyone, but he still loved her. Everett raised an eyebrow.
This was your best friend?
Yes, Everett. She was also fierce and beautiful, and I'd known her forever. She knew me better than anyone. That counts for a lot, you know?
If you say so.
He went back to his work, calm and contained, but I was wound tight with adrenaline. Everett had never been a teenage girl. Maybe there was some equivalent in the adolescent male, something that simmers under the surface of a friendship like that. But the simple truth was that when a girl like Corinne loves you, you don't ask why. You just hope it doesn't change. Tyler never understood either. Inevitably, he was the thing that changed us. Winter break, senior year, Corinne had dragged me to a party where I didn't want to be in the first place, mostly because my brother would be there. Don't tell Tyler, Corinne had said. It'll be a surprise. She told me to find a place for our jackets, and I watched from inside as she practically threw herself at Tyler, who was sitting in the back of his truck, tailgate down, legs dangling over the edge. He tossed her aside. It wasn't a hard push, but he was firm, and Corinne remained in motion until colliding with the car beside his. "Domestic abuse, asshole," she'd said, rubbing her side as a crowd started to gather. I was already outside, had started moving the second I saw her lean into him.
"Not interested," Tyler said, his eyes scanning the crowd, settling on me.
He pushed through the crowd, into the house, while Corinne recounted the story to everyone who would listen.
"Were you really wondering what I would do?"
he'd said to me.
"I'm not one of her games. Don't play them with me, Nick."
"I'm not," I said. "I didn't know she would do that." He cut his eyes through the crowd, and I saw where they landed. I watched as Corinne stared back.
"You're friends with her. You're already playing."
Truth or dare? Dare. Dare. Always take the dare. Tick-tock, Nick. I confronted her as we were leaving while Tyler waited for me at the front door. "What the hell, Corinne?" I asked. "You needed to know," she said, smiling at me. "And now you do." She rubbed her arm, leaned close when she saw Daniel watching us. "But tell me, does he always push that hard?" That was 6 months before she disappeared. I started to pull away, just a little. 18, on the cusp of adulthood, and perpetually shaken by the feeling that at any moment I might burst from my skin, that I was trapped, and Cooley Ridge was the thing I had to escape. I had missed something. That was what I'd told Everett. Ignoring her calls while I was with Tyler, brushing her off when she showed up pretending we had plans, heading out with Tyler instead. I hadn't been looking. And then she was gone. Parts of these stories made it into that imaginary box, the official investigation, in witness statements and people's suspicions. Tyler pushing Corinne made it into the box. Bailey kissing Jackson made it into the box. But there were countless stories that never did. Things I held on to that felt too private. Like her whisper in the middle of the night from the sleeping bag beside me. Like the time the bird flew into the high living room window at her house. How she didn't flinch, just rolled her eyes and took a shovel from the garage and bashed the bird as its wings beat against the sidewalk. How the noise of the wings on the concrete haunted me for months. And so did her words. "You're welcome," she'd said to it after. Or the senior year camping trip, how she dragged me with her into the outdoor shower. "Don't be such a prude," making it seem like a show, our bare feet visible under the swinging door, hanging our clothes over the wall. "Soap my back?" she'd asked, loud enough for someone outside to whistle. She'd turned so slowly I could see the gash running from spine to shoulder blade and another below, fine and precise, as if made by a razor. I never said anything, just moved the bar of soap around, never too close. Never knew if it was from Jackson or her dad or something else. But she showed me, and I knew. And when we walked out, our wet skin clinging to our dry clothes, I'd felt the heat of Jackson's glare, felt him watching me through the trees for the rest of that trip. Corinne was larger than life here, had become even larger because she disappeared. But she was just a kid, 18, and bursting out of her skin, believing the world would bend to her will. Must have torn her up something good the first time she realized it wouldn't. Everett pushed the windows up, the edges scraping wood against wood in high-pitched resistance, his papers fluttering on the table, the sound hypnotic. I spent the rest of the afternoon wrapping the china in old newspapers, my fingertips black and sooty, and loading the car with boxes for Daniel. When it was time to go to Daniel and Laura's, I shut and locked the windows Everett had opened.
"It'll be like an oven when we get back," Everett said.
"It gets chilly at night. You're in the mountains. Go ahead and start the air in the car," I called. I heard the engine turn over, and I peered out the kitchen window once more. Then I dragged the chair from the kitchen table and wedged it under the handle of the back door. If someone tried to come inside again, I'd know. The chair would be moved, or the windows would be unlocked. I'd know. There were black smudges under Laura's eyes as she greeted Everett, and Daniel was rubbing the back of his neck like there was a kink he couldn't work out. But Laura was nothing if not a southern hostess. She'd reached the size where it was impossible to hug without coming at her from the side, which Everett was doing, her expression switching to a practiced glow. "I've heard so much about you," she said to Everett, her swollen fingers on the back of his neck as she air-kissed his cheek.
"You too,"
he said, backing away, his hands shoved deep in his pockets.
"I'm so glad I finally get to meet you."
"Same," she said. "I can't wait to hear all about the wedding. Nick's been too busy with the house since she got back." Playful grin in my direction. Everett fought a smile as I raised an eyebrow at him.
"When are you due?"
he asked. She ran her hands over the floral dress stretched across her stomach. 3 weeks.
"Do you know what you're having?"
Laura cut her eyes to me. "Girl," she said.
"Any names picked out?"
Again, with the look at me as it became obvious that I had not actually told Everett much about her. "Shayna."
"Pretty."
She cocked her head to the side. "After Dan and Nick's mom." Everett nodded too quickly, and Daniel waved his arm toward the living room, rescuing us both.
"Nick said you needed to send some emails?"
Daniel led him to the couch, and Laura dropped the act, her shoulders slumping as she rested against the wall.
"Is this a bad time? Are you okay?" I asked.
Laura pulled me into the kitchen, eyes wide. "Oh, my God, Nick," she said. She was like this. She believed that having the label of sister-in-law meant we were officially confidants, neither of us having to earn it. Never mind that she'd ignored me all through high school and then after until she started dating Daniel 4 years ago. It was like she'd suddenly decided we would become close and was now determined to make it so. "What's wrong?" I asked. A timer over the stove started beeping, but Laura didn't seem to notice.
"The police were just here," she whispered.
She was nearly pressed up against me, and the timer was getting more insistent, and I felt a dull headache forming behind my eyes. Daniel finally crossed the room and hit the timer, frowning at the way Laura and I were standing.
"What did they want?" I asked, facing Daniel.
"Oh, you mean other than to push me into early labor?" She rubbed her stomach again, letting out a slow breath. "Have they been to see you?"
"Laura, what did they say?"
"Oh, they didn't say anything. They asked. They demanded. They treated me like...
"Laura?"
Daniel warned. Everett stood in the doorway, his laptop folded at his hip.
"Everything okay?"
"You finished?" I asked, pulling away from Laura.
"I was just pressing send on a few emails."
His eyes moved systematically from me to Laura to Daniel. Laura shifted her weight.
"You're a lawyer," she said. "So tell me, is it legal to question someone for no reason?"
"Laura, I didn't want to drag Everett into this. I didn't want this dragged into my life with him."
"Back up a second,"
Everett said.
"Are we still talking about your dad?"
Laura leaned back against the counter.
"The police just came by here asking me about Annalise Carter. For no reason. Can they do that?"
His face tightened, then relaxed.
"They didn't arrest anyone, so they don't have to advise you of your rights. And you don't have to talk to them, but they can still try."
She shook her head at him.
"Of course you have to talk to them."
"No, legally."
She laughed.
"Legally."
She pushed off the counter, and she moved her hands to her lower back.
"If you don't talk, they'll think you had something to do with it. Even I know that."
"What did you say?" I asked Laura.
"There was nothing to say. It was Bricks, you know, Jimmy Bricks. Remember him? But also another guy, not in uniform. I didn't know him. He's the one who did most of the talking. He asked if we knew her, and of course we knew her, but not well. Bricks could have told him that. Then he asked when we last had interaction with her, and I wasn't sure. Maybe church a few weeks ago? Maybe she asked about the baby? I don't know. I barely knew the girl. Then he asked if Daniel knew her."
"They're just fishing,"
Everett said. "What about you?" I asked Daniel. "What did you say?"
"I wasn't here,"
he said, his jaw clenched, when I realized what exactly the police were after. why Laura thought they might come to me next. Daniel. His name was getting dragged out of the box.
"You know what I thought when they showed up? I thought something had happened to Dan," Laura said, her hands back on her stomach. She took a deep breath. "They shouldn't be allowed to do that." Her hands tightened into fists. "This is our life."
Daniel rubbed her back.
"All right. It's done," he said.
"It's not done," Laura said, her eyes glistening as she looked up at Daniel. "They're just getting started."
Neither of us had any words of comfort after that. We'd lived through it once before, after all. Even though Annalise had been our alibi, had corroborated my story that Daniel and I were fighting and he hit me, that didn't clear him. In fact, that made it worse. By the time the story rolled through town, people wondered what else he did to me behind closed doors. Were those bruises on my back? What happened in that house without a mother, with a half-vacant father? Were he and Corinne ever involved? They had asked. They'd asked him. They'd asked all of us. "Never," said Daniel. "Never," said Bailey. "Never," said I. Dinner was barbecue chicken and vegetables that Laura had grown herself. She'd also made the sweet tea, which Everett had obviously never tasted before. His eyes gave him away when he took a gulp, but he recovered well enough, and I squeezed his leg under the table. "Sugar and liquor," I said. "We take them very seriously." He smiled, and I thought maybe we would get through this all right. But it took only until the second gap of silence, knives sliding against the dishes, bread crunching in my mouth, for Laura to start up again.
"They should be looking at the workers from 10 years ago, see if there's any working the fair. I told them that. 2 makes a pattern, right?"
The ends of her long blonde hair were centimeters from brushing her dinner, and I motioned my fork toward her plate.
"Oh," she said. "Thanks."
She brushed it back behind her shoulders. "Dinner's delicious," I said.
"Pass the butter?"
Daniel asked.
"They're looking in all the wrong places," Laura went on.
I tried to catch Daniel's eye, but he was focused on the chicken he was cutting from the bone, his expression unreadable. She pushed her chair a little farther out, twisting to the side.
"Honestly, they should be talking to Tyler more."
My hand froze, my knife over the chicken. She leaned closer, conspiratorially.
"No offense, Nick, but he was seeing her. And I heard he was the last phone call on record."
Daniel put his cup down on the table a little too hard.
"Who's Tyler?"
Everett asked. Laura laughed at him before she realized he was serious. Daniel cleared his throat and answered for her.
"A friend we grew up with. He was seeing Annalise. He and his dad own a construction company, and they've been helping us with a few repairs."
"You know, Nick's Tyler," Laura said, like that should clear it all up.
"Oh, my God," I said, rolling my eyes. "Ex-boyfriend, Everett. Tyler was my high school boyfriend." Everett smiled tightly at Laura.
"Nick's Tyler, huh?"
Then to me.
"And he's helping with the house?"
"Oh," Laura cut in, "but that was years ago. He's good people. You'd like him."
Daniel choked, coughed into the crook of his elbow, and Laura reached an arm for him.
"Are you okay?"
My fork trembled over my plate, and I pressed my hands to my legs to still them. "You think he's involved in Annalise's disappearance?" I asked. "Is that what you told the cops?"
"No, I didn't mean to imply that. I just meant they should be asking him questions, not us. He probably knows more."
"Oh!" Laura gasped, grabbed my hand, and pressed it to her stomach. I froze, trying to politely pull away when something rolled, slowly and languidly, and I felt myself sucking in a breath, leaning closer, moving my hands, trying to find it again.
"You feel that?" she asked.
I looked into her face, a little rounder than pretty, balancing out Daniel's harsh edges, and I felt in that moment how lucky this baby would be. Unlike my mother, Laura would live, and Daniel would know what to do, wouldn't cower under the weight of responsibilities.
"This will be you guys someday," Laura said, and I gently pulled back my hands.
Everett finally pretended not to hear part of our conversation, concentrating on his food. Daniel was doing the same. This is really good, Laura, I said.
It really is,
Everett said. I cleared the table with Everett's help.
Join me for a drink out back?
Daniel said to Everett.
I'll join you out back, but I'll have to pass on the drink.
He grinned at me.
Nicolette took me out and got me toasted last night. You guys don't mess around down here.
Daniel laughed.
No, I suppose we don't. Where'd she take you? Murray's?
Everett said.
Kenny's? Kelly's.
Daniel corrected as I scrubbed the dishes in the sink.
You don't say.
I spun around. Daniel, show him the backyard. Seriously, Everett, if you thought our view was nice, this place is amazing. Sit, I told Laura as she tried to help. Thanks. I didn't mean to get you in trouble with Everett.
You didn't get me into trouble, I said. I just don't talk about home much. Probably caught him by surprise.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, she said. I was just shaken from the cops showing up, and when I'm nervous, I talk too much. I nodded, and then I did something that surprised us both as she walked to the back door. I hugged her. My hands were soapy, and the ends of her hair held some crumbs, and I felt her abdomen pressing into my side. You and Daniel will be fine, I said, and when I pulled back, she nodded quickly, tears in her eyes. She cleared her throat. You coming? She motioned for the back porch, where Everett and Daniel were sitting under the light, watching the sunset. In a sec. Gotta use the bathroom. I grabbed my purse and waited in the hall until I heard the screen door bang shut. Now that the nursery was almost done, Daniel's office was mostly a storage area under the stairs, about the size of a walk-in closet. I took out the manila envelope full of cash and used a pen to write Daniel's name across it. I didn't think Laura came in here much, but I figured I should leave it inside his desk drawer just in case. I owed Daniel money, but if I sent a check, he wouldn't cash it. If I held it out to him, he wouldn't take it. I probably could have given it to Laura, but I was pretty sure she didn't know about it. Telling her now would only make her wonder what other secrets Daniel was keeping. I hadn't started paying it back for a long time, and it had been hard to scrape together, after rent and lease on top of school loans. But I was staying here for the summer, and that kid paid me for the sublet up front, and if I let myself get a month behind on the car payment just this once, I could leave this for him. Before the baby. All debt settled. All ties severed. He'd given it to me before I left, out of some misguided sense of responsibility. He'd given it to me and let the garage sit unfinished. For school, he said, and he told me to go. A good sister wouldn't have taken the money, but he still had that broken nose, and it was hard not to remember. Hard to say no to his black eyes. He said he wanted me to take it, to have it. Mostly, though, he wanted me to go. I pulled open Daniel's drawer, pushed the stack of notepads to the side so he'd see the envelope in the bare spot beside them. But the light from the hall caught on something in the back corner, a flash of silver, the gleam of a key. I looked over my shoulder, then reached deep inside. It looked like a house key, and it was attached by a simple ring to an engraved silver keychain, the loops and swirls coming together in an artistic rendition of the letter A. Please, no. I heard laughter from outside, the screen door creaking open. I took the key, left the money on top of the desk, and slid the key into my pocket. Everett, I called. I'm sorry, I'm not feeling well. They slowly made their way back inside, discussing when we might next be in town. Daniel took a business card from Everett, promising to call if he ever needed anything, anything at all. Everett put a hand on my arm as we walked in the twilight to my car.
That was fun.
Liar, I said. I cast a quick glance back at Daniel, who watched us from the front window. The A could stand for anything, I told myself. The key could be for anywhere. It didn't have to mean anything. It didn't have to be my brother.
So were you ever going to tell me about this Tyler guy?
If the drive were a straight line on a map, it should only take 5 minutes. But the roads weaved unnecessarily, cutting around forest and mountain, and it would probably take us closer to 20. You're not going to grill me on ex-boyfriends, are you? I checked to see if he was kidding. Oh, you are.
Stop trying to be cute,
he said. There's nothing to tell, Everett.
That's not what Laura thought.
This is how it is here. Gossip from 10 years ago is still relevant, because nobody ever leaves.
But you did.
I did. He frowned, unconvinced. We were just kids, Everett. He stretched and leaned his head against the window, and the side of his mouth quirked up.
Did you go to prom with him?
Stop, I said. But he was teasing, and I was laughing. No prom.
Lose your virginity to him at 16 in the back of his pickup?
You're such a jerk.
Because I'm right?
Huge smile. No, I said. 17, in his room, on his bed that was just a mattress and box spring with the extra blanket he pulled from the couch because he knew I liked it warmer. It was my birthday, and his hands shook on the buttons of my dress, and I put my hands over his to still them, to help him. The car was too cramped, too hot, and I rolled our windows down, the air running through my hair like a memory I couldn't grasp. A lifetime ago, Everett. I parked the car in my driveway, letting the headlights illuminate the empty porch.
Okay, so could this Tyler guy have done something to Annalise? What do you think?
Everett asked. God, were we really still talking about this? I turned off the car, the night dark and alive. Nobody knows if anything even happened to her. Her brother saw her go into the woods. Nobody knows if she came back. Maybe she did. Maybe she left on her own.
But could he have?
Could he have done it? That was quite the question. He seized on my pause.
I don't want you staying here by yourself anymore.
You're not serious.
Your ex was the last call on record to a girl who disappeared from the woods in your backyard, and he's been working on your house.
Tyler wouldn't hurt me, I said as we walked inside.
People change over the course of 10 years, Nicolette.
I know that, I said. Except not really. Not really. People were like Russian nesting dolls, versions stacked inside the latest edition, but they all still lived inside, unchanged, just out of sight. Tyler was Tyler, a man who would never hurt me, I had no doubt, but a man who also once loved it when his girlfriend hung off the edge of a Ferris wheel. A man who pushed Corinne in full view of a party and never made excuses for it. I checked the kitchen chair, wedged under the back door. Was it off just a bit? To the side? Was this exactly how I'd left it?
You okay?
Everett called. I felt electricity everywhere. In the air, in the walls. Just thinking, I said.
Come to bed.
Not tired, I said. I watched our reflection in the window, Everett coming closer, his hand brushing my hair over my shoulder, his mouth pressed to the skin of my neck.
Come to bed with me,
he said again. I focused on the distance past our reflections, beyond the trees. Not tired, I said again. I felt the weight of the key in my pocket, the ridges pressing up against my skin, all the possibilities existing all at once. The day before. Day 12. There was something in this house. With the skeletons, my dad had said yesterday. He hadn't been making any sense, but if people got desperate enough, they might try to find a meaning in his twisted thoughts, just as I was. And then I wouldn't be the only one searching. I had called Everett for advice about my dad, and he'd said he would handle it. But he was in Philadelphia, and I was here, and I hadn't heard from him since yesterday's phone call. If Everett couldn't tell me how to get this to stop, they'd eventually search this house just like I'd been searching all night. Until I realized what Dad must have meant. The closet. He'd meant his closet. I'd already gone through mine, and Daniel's was completely bare. He meant here, in the unlit closet off the master bedroom. He had to. but all I could find were his old work clothes that he'd never use again, and the ratty slippers that I really needed to toss, and a few coins scattered across the wood floor, strewn with dust. I yanked all the clothes off the hangers in a desperate last-ditch attempt to find anything, the metal hangers colliding as they swayed, until I became a girl sitting in the middle of a heap of musty clothes, trying to hold her shit together. This is what you get for listening to the senile, Nick. This is what you get. I stood back up and took a deep breath to steady my hands, but the tremor still ran through my fingers. My head dipped down and I tried again, bracing my arms on the wall in front of me, my forehead resting on the plaster, my eyes focusing on the grains of wood below me. Dust on the floor, a bobby pin that must have been here since my mom was alive, and two tiny screws beside my left foot kicked into the corner. If I were slowly losing my mind, where would I keep things? I tapped the screws with my bare toe, and as they rolled, I saw that the faces were painted white, like the walls. I checked above me. There was an air conditioning vent missing its two bottom screws. The top right corner was only partially secured. I sucked in a breath and felt a surge of discovery, of hope. My shaking hands twisted the loose screw until it fell to the floor with the others, the vent hanging at an odd angle, the rectangular duct behind it now exposed. I couldn't see in from this angle, but I reached inside and felt paper, notebooks with spiral binding. I pulled them out, letting them crash to the floor, a few loose-leaf sheets raining down on top. I stood on my toes, reached deep inside, and scooped what I could out of the vent. Papers and dust and notebooks littering the closet floor. How much deeper did this go? How far into this house did my father's secret seep? I imagined papers lining the spaces between the walls, like skeletons. I jammed the heap of clothes against the wall and stepped on top, pushing myself higher so I could see into the darkness. The vent cut at an angle, jutting upward at 90 degrees near the back. I'd reached for the few remaining scraps, my fingertips just grasping the corner of a yellowed page when the doorbell rang. Shit. Shit, shit, shit. Not enough time. Not fast enough. Could they get a search warrant this fast? Would they know what they were looking for? Where to look? I froze, holding my breath. My car was out front. They knew I was home. The bell again, and the dull thud of someone knocking. I didn't have to answer. Out for a walk. In the shower. Picked up by friends. But did it matter if I was here or not? If they had a warrant, they didn't need me to be present to gain entry, I was pretty sure. I moaned and shoved everything back into the duct, crumpled the pages and threw them in as far as they would go. Then I replaced two of the screws, but the doorbell rang again, and I fumbled with the third screw, so I shoved it into my pocket, then raced down the stairs, my hair a wreck, my clothes a wreck, as if I'd just stumbled out of bed. Good. I took a deep breath, made myself yawn, and opened the door. The son stood behind Everett, who had his phone out, his hand raised to the door as if about to knock once more. He beamed as I threw myself into his arms with unrestrained relief. Everett. Not the police. Everett. My legs were wrapped around his waist, and I breathed in his familiar scent, his hair gel and soap and starch, as he walked us inside laughing.
"Missed you, too," he said. "Didn't mean to wake you, but I wanted it to be a surprise."
I slid down his body, took in his jeans, his lightweight polo, the suitcase on the porch. "I'm surprised," I said, my hand still on him, his solid arms, the strength of his grip. "Real. What are you doing here?"
"You asked for my help, and you have it. This is one of those things that needs to be handled in person. Also, I wanted an excuse to see you," he said, his eyes quickly skimming over my disheveled appearance. His smile faltered, and he tried to hide it under feigned confusion.
"Where did I put the suitcase? Oh, there."
He pulled his suitcase inside the doorway, and when he looked back at me, his expression was typical Everett, calm and collected. "So what do we need to do?" I asked, shoulders tense, a headache brewing behind my eyes.
I already stopped by the police station on the way here, delivered the paperwork, and demanded they cease all questioning with your father pending evaluation.
I felt my entire body relax, my muscles turning languid. Oh, God, I love you. He stood in the middle of the living room, taking it all in, the boxes stacked around the dining room and foyer, the rickety table and the screen door that creaked, the floor that had seen better days, the furniture that had been awkwardly pulled away from the walls for painting, and me. He was definitely looking at me. I pressed my palms to my hips to keep them still.
"I told you I'd take care of it,"
he said. "Thank you," I said. And then it was just Everett and me in this place I thought he'd never see, and I wasn't sure what to do next. His eyes skimmed over me one more time.
"It'll be okay, Nicolette."
I nodded.
"Are you okay?"
I tried to imagine what he must be seeing. Me, a mess. I hadn't showered since yesterday, and I'd been digging through closets all night. I'd had way too much coffee, and my hands kept shaking if they weren't holding on to something. "It's been stressful," I said.
"I know. I could hear it in your voice yesterday."
"Oh, crap. Don't you have work? What day was it again? Thursday? No, Friday. Definitely Friday. How did you get away?"
"I brought it with me. I hate to do this, but I'll be working most of the weekend."
"How long are you staying?" I asked, brushing by him to drag his suitcase, bigger than an overnight bag, away from the screen door.
"We'll see your dad's doctors today, and hopefully they'll have the papers we need by Monday, but I'll have to go after that."
I thought of the notebooks in the vents, the door that wouldn't lock, the missing people then and now. "We should stay in a hotel. This place has no air, and you're going to hate it."
"Don't be silly,"
he said.
"The nearest hotel is at least 25 miles away."
So he had checked, and he wasn't counting the budget motel that definitely had vacancy on the road between this town and the next.
"So, show me the place,"
he said. Suddenly, I didn't want to. I shrugged, marginalizing the house and all it represented, no longer thinking, "That's my dad's chair and my mom's table that once belonged to my grandparents that she stripped down and refinished," instead turning it into a box of wood, trying to see it through Everett's eyes. It isn't much. Dining room, living room, kitchen, laundry, bathroom down that hall, and a porch out back, but the furniture's gone and the mosquitoes are killer. Everett looked like he was searching for a place to put his laptop, specifically the dining room table. "Here," I said, shuffling the receipts and papers into piles, scooping things up and dumping them into the kitchen drawers I'd just emptied. He put his laptop on the cleared table, along with his accordion-style briefcase.
"Can I work here?"
"Sure, but there's no internet." He made a face, then picked up a receipt I'd missed. Home Depot, the nearly illegible date highlighted in bright yellow, and frowned at it. I took it from his hands and balled it up like it was inconsequential. Nobody's lived here in over a year, kind of wasteful to pay for internet. Not to mention, we didn't have an internet line before that. Around here, service cut in and out from satellite if there was an inkling of bad weather, and it wasn't worth the annoyance for my dad. Most everyone could check email on a phone, but only one service provider worked, and it wasn't Everett's. "You could use the library? It's near the police station, not too far. I could drive you."
"This is fine, Nicolette. But maybe we can hit the library on the way to see your dad so I can send a file."
"Are you sure? Because..."
"I'm here to see you,"
he said.
"Not sit in a library. I missed you."
Now that he mentioned it, we hadn't been apart for this long. Not like we went out of our way to never be separated, but I wondered if we'd just been stuck in the pull of forward momentum, never taking a step back or a step away. What would happen if we paused the track? Took a breath. He missed me, sure. He wanted to help, sure. But I also had the feeling that his case was getting to him. Maybe he needed a break. Distance. I could hear that in his voice on the phone. "What did the police say?" He ran a hand through his hair.
"Not much they can say. They didn't look too happy to see me, but it doesn't seem to be their top priority at the moment. I'm not sure his statement will help with the current situation.
He looked at me from the corner of his eye as he set up his work on the table.
Tell me about this missing girl. The posters are everywhere.
I wouldn't call her a girl, exactly, but her name is Annalise Carter. Her brother saw her walk into the woods, and she wasn't home the next morning. Nobody's seen her since. My eyes involuntarily strayed to the backyard, toward her property.
You know her?
Everett, you know everyone in a town like this. We weren't ever friends or anything, if that's what you mean. She's younger than me, but she lived behind us. I tilted my head toward the kitchen, and Everett went to the window.
I only see trees.
Okay, well, not right behind us, but they're our closest neighbors.
Huh.
He didn't pull away from the window, and that made me nervous. There were secrets in those woods, the past rising up and overlapping, an unstoppable trail of dominoes already set in motion. I shook my head to clear the thought as Everett turned around.
What's the matter?
He asked. The disappearing girls, the police and my father and the things he was saying, the papers in the closet that I had to get rid of before someone else came looking. I lost the ring, I said, my breath coming in shallow spurts as I tried to tamp down the panic, the sting as tears rushed to my eyes and Everett going all fuzzy. I'm so sorry. I took it off to box things up and we were moving everything around and now I can't find it. My hands started shaking, and he grabbed them and pulled me close. I rested my forehead against his chest.
Okay. It's okay. It's somewhere in the house, then?
I don't know. I lost it. I heard an echo in the house. My ghost, maybe. Another version of myself in these halls from another time. I pulled my hands back, balled them into fists. I lost it. Two missing girls. 10 years apart, the fair back in town, and all of us, closing the gap of 10 years like it was nothing but an inch, just a blink, a quick glance over the shoulder.
Don't cry,
he said, running his thumb across my cheek, wiping up the tears. Just a piece of metal, Tyler had said. Just money.
It's insured,
Everett added.
I'm sure it'll turn up.
I nodded into his chest, his hands pressed lightly against my shoulder blades.
Are you sure you're okay?
I nodded again, felt him laugh in his chest.
I never pictured you as a girl who'd cry over a lost ring.
I took a slow breath and pulled back. It was a really nice ring. He laughed for real, louder this time, his head tilted back like always.
Come on.
He slung an arm over my shoulder as he walked up the stairs, luggage in his other hand.
Finish the tour?
I laughed into his side. You're going to wish you picked the hotel. We stood together in the narrow hall that extended the length of the upstairs. One master with a bath, two other bedrooms connected by a shared bathroom. That's my dad's room, I said, gesturing to the queen bed and the old armoire. I pulled Everett along, shut the door as we passed. This one was Daniel's, I said at the next door, but he took his furniture. It had become a dumping ground of things my dad didn't know what to do with. Old novels, teaching material, boxes of lesson plans, dog-eared philosophy books and notes written in slanted script. We're getting a dumpster delivered next week. Moving on, I cleared my throat. This is mine. The yellow bed looked drab, and the room looked way too small now that Everett was here. He didn't like staying at my studio. I couldn't imagine his feelings on this.
Maybe we should stay in the other room? It's got a bigger bed,
he said. I am not sleeping in my parents' bed. I'll take the couch if it's too small for you. He eyed me, eyed the bed.
We'll work it out later.
Everett held his phone against the car window and muttered a sarcastic, Hallelujah, when we were halfway to Grand Pines. His phone dinged in response, downloading emails now that we were back in the land of the data plan. He scanned the surroundings quickly before diving into his emails.
We should come back in the fall. I bet it's a sight,
he said, tap, tap, tap from his cell as he typed. Yeah, I said, even though we knew we wouldn't. Fall comes with a vengeance here after the leaves change. For 2 days when the wind blows, they rain down in a storm, coating everything like snow. It's prettier in the winter, I said.
Hmm.
Except if you're trying to get anywhere. Then this road feels like Donner Pass.
Hmm.
Tap, tap, tap on the keypad, and a whoosh as his message was sent. There's a monster out here, I said.
Hmm. Wait, what?
I grinned at him. Just checking. The woman working the reception desk of Grand Pines started preening when we walked in the front door. Back straight, hair flipped, chest out. I was used to it, the unconscious way people reacted to Everett. Everett is old money Philadelphia. His whole family is that way, like old stately buildings and cobblestone and ivy. And as with the Liberty Bell, the imperfections only make them more interesting, more worthy of the life that fate has bestowed on them. Everett can hold court, quite literally, even with his friends, even with me. It's a spell, a beautiful spell, the way he's assertive without being bossy, confident without being smug. I imagine his family members were taught this line to walk as they were taught to crawl. Know thy classics and thy beer. Finely tuned, all of them, with a father to disapprove instantly if they veered off course. I stood confidently by Everett's side as he marched into Grand Pines. They never stood a chance, and I knew it. As he walked off to see the director, the woman behind the desk raised an eyebrow at me, then the corner of her mouth, as in, nice. I nodded. I know. But then her eyes assessed me like she was picking me apart, and I felt the clothes that didn't fit right, and my hair that wasn't done, and I knew my hands were probably still trembling from the caffeine. I'm here to see my dad, Patrick Farrell, I said. Okay, sure, she said, picking up the phone. The nurse I'd seen on the first day led me to the common room where Dad was playing with a stack of cards, some game that looked like solitaire but didn't seem to follow any rules I understood. Look who I found, Patrick! Your daughter! He looked up, smiled big and real, and I felt my face doing the same.
Hi, Nick.
Such a simple, beautiful sentence.
You sure are popular today, the nurse said, leaving us.
I grabbed her arm as she walked away. Who was here? The police?
The what?
She stared at my fingers on her sleeve, and I quickly released her.
No, the man who comes for lunch.
She brushed her hand over her arm, smoothing out the wrinkles. Daniel? I asked, looking from her to my dad. She shook her head.
No, the other one. Patrick, who's the man who comes to lunch on Fridays?
He drummed his fingers against the table and stared past me, a slight grin.
I can't tell you that, Nick.
I grinned at the nurse like I thought this was cute, funny even. Who was here, Dad?
I'm not supposed to tell you.
He had the audacity to laugh. The nurse winked at my dad, then turned to me. Good-looking guy. Blue eyes, brown hair, always in jeans and work boots. I swung my head back to my father, who was chewing the inside of his cheek. Tyler? I asked. The nurse patted my dad's shoulder and walked away. He'd scooped up the cards and was focused on dealing the stack between the two of us. I had no idea what to do with my hand. He played a king and seemed to be waiting for something from me. Why the hell does Tyler come here?
Why wouldn't Tyler come? Did you lay exclusive claim to rights of friendship with Tyler Ellison? Your turn,
he said, gesturing to my cards. I threw down an ace, tried to relax my shoulders to keep this conversation from sliding away from him too quickly. Huh. I didn't realize you guys had so much in common. Dad frowned as he picked up the stack, then played a five of diamonds.
Pay attention.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Tell me what Tyler wants with you. I stopped playing, trying to hold his focus. He shrugged, avoiding eye contact.
He doesn't want anything. He just comes.
He gestured to my hand until I threw out a random card.
He's a good kid, Nick. I think he likes the food.
He looked around the room like he was momentarily confused.
Or maybe the young nurse over there who works Fridays. I don't know, but he comes for lunch.
I peered over my shoulder, saw the nurse lingering near the front desk through the doorway. She was shorter than me. Her scrubs were nondescript, and her lipstick veered well outside the line of her lips. But she was attractive. Her hair was dark and neat. She was young. Perky. "And you're not supposed to tell me?" I asked.
"Definitely not."
"Two of hearts. And why is that, if there's not some other reason he's coming? Think about it, Dad. Two of spades."
"You're not paying attention,"
he said.